Good evening, everybody, and welcome back to another episode of The Bog right here on YouTube temporarily until we find a new home. We're looking at Trovo. Not sure where we're going to go yet. We might even go full-time over at Odyssey because I hear that they have a live stream option now. Unfortunately, I couldn't get my camera to work, so it's just going to be audio tonight. WBOG Radio. But if you like The Bog, you support The Bog, you want to see The Bog grow, help keep the lights on, make sure you go to patreon.com/The Bog and sign up. There's a tier for everybody, $5 all the way up to $50. And you can get the RSS feed for audio of every single show that we do. So you can listen to it in your car, at work, on your commutes, or at the gym. We got a big wave of content coming up over there. Well, we've had some technical difficulties, so we haven't been able to upload. But to all the Bog Lords that are signed up over there, big wave of exclusive content coming your way, as well as all Bog audio episodes. Also, if you want to support the Bog another way, make sure to go to shop.spreadshirt.com/bogshop. What do we got? Summertime's coming. Esoteric Order of Grill Dads, I know you're listening. So if you want a grill dad with the Bog Lords, make sure you get yourself an artisan chef apron that has the Bog logo on it. Support us that way. But if you want to support a friend of ours, make sure to go to facebook.com/IronAgeJodish. Check out our boy Neil John. He's really great, man. I'm telling you. It's authentic Vedic astrology, something I'd never thought I'd be into. He turned me on to it. It's incredible. Everybody that's got a reading from him has told me it's incredible. It was incredible for me. Guys on the show got readings. It's incredible stuff. Neil John, the guy's a genius. I will say that. I know. I hope he doesn't hear that because I know he'll be like, oh, dude, don't call me that. But he is. He is. He's a genius. He's great. Facebook.com/IronAgeJodish. And if you decide to get a reading, make sure to tell him Big Dave sent you. So tonight, we are going to talk about something a little more practical. We're going to take a step away from some of the big brain stuff, some of the historical stuff, some of the archaeological stuff, and we're going to take a step into practical solutions, practical living, practical life, pragmatic things that can help us grow, and that's going to be tribe building. We're going to talk about tribe building ethics, how folks out there can build tribes, how folks out there can build clans, and how we can better grow our community, because this is really important stuff. What is the point of any of this that we're doing if it's not building communities, if it's not educating our children, if it's not having children, if it's not contributing to our health, wealth, and happiness as a folk? You know, I'm somebody that I have a little bit of experience with this. Our boy, Mr. Ian, has some organizational experience as well. And there's a lot of folks out there, especially with the heathen revival, and those of you that are Setians, man, the Setian Nation, there's so many clans just popping up everywhere. I can't even tell you. Every other day, I got somebody popping up, hey, Dave, what do you think about this, or something like that. It's just incredible. Or they're reaching out to one of our other colleagues in Neurona Society or whoever, or somebody's just announcing. You know, it's just, I'm just like all over the place. So what I wanted to do is I want to hop on the microphone and talk to you guys about some of my experiences. And Ian is going to talk about, the Wolfman is going to talk about some of his experiences when it comes to the ethics and strategies and techniques and virtues of building a tribe and maintaining a tribe and going about doing that. But before I keep motor mouthing, we got the full panel tonight. Tristan, Wolfman, Andre, what's up, guys?
Hey, hey.
Hey.
And it's me, Tristan.
Oh, hey, what's up, Tristan?
Did we lose him?
That was a dirty trick right there.
He made him sound so girly. Yeah. All right, so Tristan, you and Wolfman are starting your process of clan forming and stuff like that. How about and you wanted to talk with us about, you know, maybe some different things. We have some questions from people, and we're going to go through just some very basic ideas and questions about tribe building. So, Tristan, what is the importance of tribe building? And then let's get right into the questions.
Well, I would say the importance of tribe building really goes down to the fundamental purpose of the religion itself. We always talk about very frequently about how the Germanic society was a very collectivist society. It wasn't individualist like the modern day atomized individual we have in the modern day Protestant type of morality going on there. Yeah. So everything in our theology connects to you and your relation to your family, your kin, your lineage, your community around you. All these things have very important metaphysical effects because our religion can't function in isolation. We require a community and a network of kin in order to do anything.
Yeah. Yeah, exactly. And Josh in the chat says, get together and boil some lobsters and shit. It seems we got a real fucking chowder head over here, probably from Boston or New Hampshire or something like that. Fucking wicked nice, bro. But he's right, though. Get together and boil some lobsters and shit is what he's talking
about.
Yeah,
I don't know about that. I wouldn't trust any lobsters in Arizona.
I was trying to figure out what a lobster was, and I'm like, what is this? I've never heard of it.
Yeah. He's from New England.
We don't have those here. We have scorpions.
Yeah, they got.
I assume that's kind of the same.
They got lobsters and chowder and, you know, a boar's head, and they go to the bar.
We get lobsters. They just live in the sand and sting you.
Yeah. They go to the bar and have some beers, you know. Don't be fucking wicked retarded, okay? But, but Tristan's absolutely right. To our ancestors, faith wasn't just like go to church on Sunday or read some books and fill your big brain. It was woven into their very being and woven into the very fabric of their society. They viewed themselves as a collective. So when average people ask me, say, all right, well, where do you go to church at? Like something like that, which I don't mean to make fun of people that ask me that, but it's kind of, a lot of times I just say, oh, I got a church down here. So I'll just like say something to kind of deflect so I don't have to go into the rigmarole of explaining to them that our faith does not operate like just going to a church. Yes, we can have hofs and temples, absolutely, but we are a tribal faith. And it's a little bit different than just showing up, saying praise whoever, and then going home. It is like it's a family. It's a family structure.
Well, I mean, taken from that, the nature of our lore in general displays the importance of family and how the gods themselves are a family and how most of these sagas are family stories. So really, the family element of, you know, worship and, you know, honoring the gods and ceremony, that all goes hand in hand. There's really no distinction between the two.
Yeah, absolutely. So now that we've talked about the importance of tribalism, and we have gone on and on this show talking about the importance of tribalism and how people need to go out and form clans and get together and stuff like that. And we could talk all day about the historical accounts of tribalism and the theological and mythological and all of these, you know, parts that demonstrate tribalism in our myth and in our lore and in our sources and stuff like that. But let's get down to the meat and potatoes. Andre, you are from Norway, and in Norway they do have some more tribalism than we would probably have here. Would you say that?
Yeah, absolutely. In this case, I guess you could compare it to a countrywide version of rural America, where each region has their own separate identity, and each region usually consists of several smaller clans that kind of have a coherence in a geographical area. They might have some squabbles in between them, but, you know, they unify if there's an outside threat.
So it would be like similar to like the Scots-Irish families in like Appalachia, more or less, what you're saying?
Yeah, more or less. I guess I'm not entirely familiar with that, but that's essentially what it is. You have also like a somewhat of a bigger focus on a larger, more extended family, and this family doesn't necessarily only include what we consider family. Like it can also include people that are close friends of the family. It can be people who are married into the family. It's people who are kind of sworn onto the family itself, in a way. It's not just uncles and aunts and your grandma and your grandpa and your cousins, and that's it. Mm-hmm. Of course, that plays an integral part as well.
Yeah, of course. That's it. When we say, yeah, we've gone on and on about this on the blog, talking about how the nuclear family is a degraded version of the family. When conservatives say we have to protect the nuclear family, the tradition of the nuclear family, that's not really the tradition. That's already degraded. You know what I mean? A family clan in a primordial sense, in an ancestral traditional sense, was what we would understand to be multifamily, was several dads and several several moms and aunts and uncles and cousins and everybody, and then you have a patriarch of the family who's probably somebody's granddad or even great-granddad, and it's many generations and people living together, and it's not really just mom, dad, kids, or mom, dad, kids, grandma. You know what I mean? Go ahead.
No, I was just going to say, like, in order to be a little bit, like, you know, cliche and stereotypical here with the saying that, you know, it takes a village to raise a child, you know, that rings very much true in that kind of mentality.
Yeah, absolutely. So let's get right into the kind of the questions. Tristan, what do we have on the list here? Because I know you wanted to kind of hit me with some questions and maybe my experience or Ian's experience with organizing or even specifically a clan building, which is something I have a little bit. Now, to let people know about kind of the nature of my kindred or my clan, the Skaferlings. We've been together 9 years. I think it's going to be 9 years. We've been together for a long time. And we have kind of we've gone through some transformative things through the years and stuff, but our core has always been the same. And now we are probably we're approaching 20 people, including kids. So we are not this big organization. We are not a big national organization. We don't try to be a big national organization. We are a very close-knit, intimate, high-trust group that are very local. It takes a long time to get in. There's quite a few criterias to join my clan, and we like it that way. We don't really want to become some, and I'm sure we could. We got a lot of smart people. I'm sure if we really, really wanted to, we could become some sort of really big organization with hundreds of people, but that's not really what we want. That's not really what we feel is good for us. You know, we very much like having this small, high trust, localized cell, this clan of people, you know. So my experience is not with running a large organization. I have never ran a large organization. I have always just kind of kept a small clan together for almost a decade now, which is longer than most marriages, you know. But I do have experience with building and structuring and these kinds of things. So let's get into what's on the list there, Mr. Tristan.
Right, because since I don't really have much of a practical experience in building that sort of organizational idea, I just wrote up some questions that I thought, you know, people new to this might be inclined to ask. So I'll start with the first one here. How do we find like-minded people and get them into the organization in the first place?
Well, so traditionally a lot of people, they will go on the internet and they'll find other heathens and they'll say, hey, come hang out. And that's all good and fine. And that works. And there's been a few of my kinsmen are of that kind of lean. Are people that we didn't know before and we just got connected via heathenry. But most of my kindred are people that I've known, are people that have reverted or converted or whatever you want to say, are people that I knew beforehand. And some of them are like my childhood friends, and, you know, they started just coming and hanging out, and they just eventually they loved it and they converted, and now they're part of it. You know, obviously some of them are the wives of those guys. So for me, I think a better strategy of growing your clan is converting your friends. I think that is a better idea than kind of going out and finding strangers. Because when you go out and you find strangers, heathen or not, sometimes they're nuts, right? There's no way you can really vet a stranger in just a few years. It takes more than a few years to truly, truly know somebody. So my strategy has always been, convert your friends. And it's not really like a strategy. I just invite them over, and, you know, heathenry sells itself. They love the religion. They love the rites, the rituals. They love the community. They love seeing the kids run around. They love, you know, going out into the woods. They just love the experience of heathenry. So they're like, and then they start, they're like, hey, how can I get in this? And they come to the bloats. Bloat is our most powerful tool. Bloat is our most powerful tool. When, I have friends that have no idea at all about heathenry, aren't even like really religious, but they know what bloat is, and they once in a while they'll show up at my events and they know how to participate in bloat, and they love it. And, you know, they know enough about the gods that they can hail to the gods. They know enough about the ritual that they can participate, and it's meaningful to them because that's the closest thing to a religious experience that they have. but they aren't really all in on it. And that's fine. You're going to have people like that. But I would say that bloat is our most powerful tool. Community building or community experience is our secondary, our second most powerful tool. And it just sells itself. So when it comes to how to find somebody, I would first and foremost see who's already around you. See who already is kind of looking for that support, someone that is looking for a spiritual experience that the modern world doesn't provide for them. And then it's okay as well to go out. Maybe you're using social media or whatever, and maybe there's other heathen groups out there or something, and you could just invite them over and just see what they're like. I would highly suggest a very good vetting system, which we're probably going to talk about then.
Yeah, if I can comment on that. Vetting someone takes more than years, as Dave said. And that's because even people that you know for years can kind of unveil parts of themselves that they kept hidden, or they can have circumstances change that cause them to revert to a more basal nature, I guess. But you want to look at people that have shared virtues, values, and interests. And an easy way, well, maybe not easy, but a relatively easy way to do this is to look into things where you would expect people like that to be around. So, for example, if nature conservation matters a lot to you, if you think that, you know, your take on, you know, religion in particular would speak to those kind of people that are already interested in, you know, naturalism and ecological conservation, then it would behoove you to attend, you know, national park cleanups, or, you know, if there's endangered species, like here locally, we have like the Mexican wolf that's kind of on the brink. And so a lot of people kind of rally around that as a focal point for environmental issues. And so if you get involved with those kinds of things, you'll end up meeting like-minded people. Like I have a friend of mine that, you know, I didn't know him 2 years ago, but I was in like a social media, like hunting group. And there were basically people that were poaching and bragging about it. And he and I both took issue with this. And because we took issue with it, you know, we started talking to each other in you know, messages. And 2 years later, you know, he's a good friend of mine. He's really interested in ecological stuff. Like he runs his own business doing like all natural irrigation systems. And he's a spiritual person. He's not like us. I mean, he is like of English descent or whatever. So he is ultimately, you know, folkish, but he's just kind of one of those more like new age, open-minded types, like the Sphinx guy, whose name eludes me at the moment, but just kind of, you know, very into spirituality, period, no matter where it's from globally. And so when he hears, you know, he's listened to The Bog, he might be listening now, I don't know. Hi, Clint, if you are. But he really likes what we have to say, and he likes a lot of the aesthetic and, you know, the virtue, because it already speaks to him in a level that he, you know, already cherishes. So because he and I met, because we care about, you know, wolf conservation and not poaching and, you know, saving our environment, we found a lot that we had in common. And over time, you know, we enjoyed each other's, you know, interests and content to the point where, you know, started collaborating on stuff. And that's really how you build organic relationships that last. Because if you just cast the net out, like on the internet or in a chat room, wherever, like trying to scoop up people with like a help wanted kind of ad, you're going to end up getting a lot of riffraff. And like Dave said, a lot of weird people. And that's more for your own protection and the protection of your kindred, because at the end of the day, this is a family thing. It's like, even if these are people you're not related to by blood, like Tristan and I are not related, but you know, we're working towards like a brotherhood that where it doesn't even matter to that extent, where, you know, one day our kids will probably consider getting married, that sort of thing. Because ultimately you're building an extended family unit and you're building a community. And I don't want to, you know, monologue too much about that, so we'll come back to it later. But community is really important, both in a theistic way, a social way. Social alienation is a real problem for people these days, especially young men. Economic problems, like building community is the solution to pretty much all of modernity's problems. It just requires a lot of work and a lot of trust and a lot of cohesion. And it's something you have to build.
Yeah, I really like that point. Going in and finding my biggest boon has been just my ability to make friends. I'll make friends with somebody at the store that we're both looking at the same book, or I'll make friends with somebody who's, we're both looking at the same gun, or we're both looking at, you know, wherever I'll strike up a conversation with somebody about, you know, Conan or H.P. Lovecraft or just about assume. Here's the thing about heathenry. Most of us like a lot of the same things, right? You're going to find a lot of heathens at heavy metal concerts. You're going to find a lot of heathens in the comment sections of your favorite bands. You're going to find a lot of heathens talking about tabletop games. You're going to find a lot of heathens that are into camping, into outdoor stuff. You're going to find a lot of heathens that are into guns and shooting and martial arts and lifting, very physical things. So assume that the things that you like are going to be good places to meet either heathens or people that are good heathen material, right?
I mean, we all met because of freaking 40K, right?
Yeah. Literally, the bog panel was assembled over 40K. That's literally true.
No, it really was.
So just think about it like that. My one kinsman, Seth, he came into the circle because he was friends with our other kinsmen, and they were like in like a little gun group that talked about militia stuff and survivalism and like all that kind of stuff. You know, that's how he came in, and he's into martial arts. And guess what? When he came in, he's like, "Hey, you guys play Dungeons and Dragons?" So I was like, "And you guys play Dungeons and Dragons? You guys play guitar and you guys listen to Slayer?" And it's like. You're in the right place, bud, because we all have a lot of similar interests. Maybe it's just because of how we're built or how our brains, I don't know. There's something behind that.
I think there's definitely a focus aspect to it. Like, for instance, a lot of the four of us share a lot of hobbies and interests because we're very much jive with that kind of primordial Teutonic spirit of adventuring and conquest and, you know, love of life and all that sort of thing.
Yeah. Yeah, absolutely. Absolutely. So before because we could talk about this specific topic all night long. So let's go to the next one. Mr. Tristan, what else was on the board there?
I actually have a question.
Well, actually, yeah, I was about to kick it over to Andre. Andre, we're trading off here.
Yeah, I'm asking specifically towards you, Dave, like when it comes to creating a heathen kindred, a heathen tribe, and as a figurehead, a leader of a tribe, what would you say would be your social responsibilities? Because of course we assume like there's a spiritual responsibility of, you know, holding the bloats. It's about, you know, leading the sermons and so forth. But as a social leader, kind of like how you might consider the Catholic priests kind of function as free psychologists for some people as well. How would you explain that for a heathen kindred?
That is most of what you do. That is most of what you do as a leader of a kindred or a clan. To be an alderman or an elder or chieftain or Dryton or whatever title that you have, to be an alderman is mostly about being a social leader. And first and foremost, it is about setting the tone of the culture in your tribe. Because you are going to have a little culture that you develop. You know, when you have your bro squad in high school and you guys are hanging out together, you have your own little inside jokes, you have your shared interests, and that kind of sets the tone of how the kindred behaves, right? So this, much like being the father in the family, I know there's a lot of dads out here, dad squad, rise up. Being a father of a family, you very much set the tone and the mood of the household. It trickles down from you. It's the same thing with the kindred, bro. It's if you are somebody, what you exude becomes the culture. So and eventually people that are similar or compatible with you are going to start becoming attracted to the core culture of the group. So as a social leader, it's important to be able to talk to many different types of people, to be dynamic, because your goal isn't to just and I've seen this over and over and over again. Guys they might have some charisma and they might be an alpha personality, but they go into it with the intention of, I'm doing this because I want to be in charge of something. That's not what you want to go in there for. If you go in there with that mentality of, I want to be in charge of something, it is going to be a disaster. Your job.
Being in charge.
What's that?
I'm sorry. I was going to say, being in charge, honestly, kind of sucks. Like, leadership is absolutely a burden. And people that look at it like some kind of like petty tyranny or dictatorial thing, are A, very mistaken in what their job is, and B, probably going to end up having a bad time. There's a lot of moral fables throughout history, like, that always show that people that desire power over other people in that way end up usually kind of regretting it, because they either alienate everyone that was ever close to them, or they end up, you know, surrounded by ashes, metaphorically speaking.
Yeah.
Didn't mean to cut you off, though.
No, you're good. You're good. Yeah, and that we have to understand that we are still in modernity. If somebody gets annoyed enough with the situation, they could be like, screw you, I quit. And they lose nothing, you lose a person, right? Well, they lose their community and everything like that. But they could just walk away if they really, really want to. They could just go get in their car and move, and that's it. They're gone, you know? And then you lose a member of the family. So being a leader, your first intention should be to lift these people up. You have to be dynamic and encouraging and healing. Health, wealth, and happiness. That's what I tell my kinfolk all the time. Does this contribute to your health, your wealth, or your happiness? If not, it doesn't. You don't need to be doing it. It doesn't deserve your energy. And that's kind of your job, is to set goals for people, encourage people. You are kind of like a secondary, I don't want to say a father figure, but you are like a leader. And first and foremost, in order, especially in modernity, man, it's not like the ancient world where they don't have a choice. If they try to leave, they'll just go starve and freeze to death. They can, you know, that's the pressures of the wilderness are no longer there. So they have to want to follow. They have to want to be a part of this. And the way that you do that is with love and trust. They have to love you and they have to trust you. You have to be genuine. You have to be real. You have to be honest. You have to be transparent. You have to, and you have to be dynamic. You have to understand where your limits are as a social leader. I am a very abrasive guy. You know what I mean? I'm a very easygoing guy. I'm a go with the flow kind of guy, but I'm also very abrasive. I'm the kind of guy that if you're doing something lousy, I'm going to tell you about it right to your face, and I'm not going to sugarcoat it. And some people don't react well to that. So I've been able to, over the years, I've learned to be able to identify the people that don't react to me very well. So I lean on my other kinsmen that I trust and say, hey, brother so-and-so, can you go talk to this person for me? Or even my wife is a wonderful tool. I say, honey, can you go talk to this person for me? You know, this person's not doing so good. You mind talking to him or something like that? And she goes and she appeals to a different kind of people than I do. So you have to know your limits as well as a social leader. So there's a lot that goes into it. You are more a social leader than you are a spiritual leader. But all in all, it is a spiritual thing.
Yeah, so I'll hit the next question here. So how do we handle the challenges of organizing if we live in a large urban landscape like a major city, or by contrast, a very rural or spread out location?
That's tough. That's the tough one. If you truly, truly love your kindred, and you should, if you join a kindred and you love them and they become your family and you guys have a great dynamic, you're going to have to move. You're going to have to move closer to them. It's just not an option. If your job doesn't allow it, you're gonna have to get another job. You know, your kindred. Yeah. Go ahead, Ian.
Oh yeah, I was gonna say this is probably gonna be kind of an extreme sounding answer for a lot of people, and I understand that. But ultimately, the way you got to look at this is like a colony. Ultimately, like I know we said we weren't going to talk too much about history, but two of my favorite periods are like, you know, colonial North America, including Vinland, because that was fun, and the migration period. And the relevance there is that these are both periods where new identities, new clans, new ethnicities are formed in the ashes of destruction of the old world, more or less. And so with, you know, the wolf age that is modernity, a lot of people lament, especially, you know, here in the United States, locally with, you know, recent political stuff, a lot of people feel that like their identity is fading, you know, their identity as Americans or whatever state they're from, et cetera, et cetera. And the truth is that they are. Like, it's increasingly becoming kind of a dead thing. So when you think about these kindreds, these clans, it's not just like a social club where you and your buddies, you know, drink mead and, you know, hail Odin and, you know, that's that. I mean, you will ultimately be doing that, which is great. But it's more than that. You're building a real family, a real community. So when you think about, or the question was, you know, what do you do if you're in an urban environment or you're all rural, everyone's far apart? In the meantime, as much as it sucks and as much as it's economically taxing, it is prudent to make the effort to do so. Like out west, a lot of the states are more rural. They're more spread out. You know, it's kind of clustered in urban centers and then a bunch of rural holdings. So you will have to make a drive of a couple hours. But a way around that is, you know, maybe you can't do something every week or multiple times a week, but you can definitely do something every month. And if people say they can't, then unless there's some real extraneous circumstances like their job, I would say they're probably making excuses. And the important thing is ultimately to not have excuses, and that's on the individual. And it's important to encourage people around you to not have excuses and to be bold and forthright and honest, like, you know, we're told to do, and, you know, have them all and whatnot. But at the end of the day, it is on people to have to want to do it. And you can't make people want to do stuff. So the best way around that is to, you know, put a carrot on a stick, more or less. You have to build something that's tantalizing. You have to build an organization or a kindred, a community that people want to be a part of. That's how you encourage growth. And that's how it becomes stable and successful. And so the thing is with these, you know, concepts too, you know, a lot of people are familiar with the idea of a family business. You know, your dad had a profession, so, you know, you grew up around it, you go into that profession. Our own Andre here comes from a long line of fishermen, and so, you know, it's kind of the family profession. So when you think about it in that kind of context, but on a more organic and larger scale communal level, you can think about, okay, me and Tristan and a few other guys that are in Arizona, we have a kindred, you know, this is all hypothetical example. We all, you know, get married and have kids and whatnot, and but we really want to start being a real community rather than just more of a get-together, you know, even if it's frequent, it's still, you know, traveling to meet up at like a shared space or whatever. It would be much more natural and better to just already have a space. Like, you know, if you lived in a rural state or somewhere where you could easily kind of get away, like some people look at like a land for sale, you know, they find a couple acres out in the woods or whatever. And I'm not talking about like no David Koresh Waco stuff. Don't get me wrong. I'm not suggesting you go do that and make an enemy of the ATF or nothing. What I'm saying is that if you have an interest in a profession, like let's say guy number one is really interested in meadery and beekeeping, and that's what he wants his job to be. Guy number two is really good with mechanics and trucks, and he, you know, works at an automotive shop, but he could fly on his own and, you know, be his own boss as a mechanic. You want to get people to embrace their skill set. Like, you don't want to think that, oh, we're going to go all live in a commune where we're all going to become farmers. Like, yeah, there's going to be some people that are into that, but you want to really balance and bring together people's natural skill sets to forge a community. Think of it like it's a colony, and you want someone to have, you know, every job so your community's not lacking for something, but you also want it to be healthy and strong. So you want to just keep that wheel rolling and keep adding people that are quality, having them find their place within society, and more specifically your community, and then having them pursue that with, you know, gusto and, you know, vigor, because there's good stuff to come about it. And it sounds like a lot of work, and it is, and it is a total life change for a lot of people. But when you think about it at the end of the day, I mean, America is a good example. How were most cities and towns built? A bunch of families and wagons or whatever arrived, set up camp, you know, it grew larger. They built permanent buildings. It grows larger. More people come, it grows larger. It's all just history repeating itself. But the important part here now is that you have to really make it tight. You have to have a real brotherhood and people that are, like, you know, really interested in building a community and being part of a kindred and having loyalty to one another. Because at the end of the day, if you don't have that loyalty and that shared win or lose that you share as a community and as a group, you're not going to make it. Because if some people profit and other people lose, and I don't mean to make it like economic based, but if that ends up happening, people will split apart. I've seen it happen before, and it's just kind of human nature to do so. So you really want to take it to a communal level and stop thinking about I, me, my, and start thinking about we, us. Does that make sense? I know I've been ranting.
No, perfect sense.
No, I mean, that makes real great sense to me, and I have to say I agree with that 100%.
Yeah. All right, cool.
All right, so what else we got?
Well, I can ask the next one in that case. specifically towards you again, Dave, like the idea of creating these kindreds and choosing a name for it.
Uh-huh.
And you chose specifically this the Skaferlings, right?
Yep.
Why did you choose that name, and how would other people go about choosing a name for their own tribe and identity and kindred?
Well, first and foremost, it needs to have it needs to fit the format of ancestral naming, right? It has to fit the format of a clan. When we first started, we were actually called the Penforge Kindred, and then we were called the Penfolk Kindred, and then we took the ancestral format and changed ourselves to the Skaferlings, which Skaferlings is a derivative of King Skef. It means to be like the children of King Skef, which is very important because it is tied to a lot of the surnames that were in the founding of Pennsylvania. Just picking a name is important. There's nothing wrong with picking a name of maybe a shared ancestor. Maybe you and another guy look back as far as you can and see if there's any connections in your families. Maybe sometimes it might go back to, you know, medieval England or something. And then Ling or Lung means like how we would understand, like, I don't know. Ling just means like children of.
It means descended of.
Yeah, like descended of. So, that's about it as far as picking a name. And make sure it's all encompassing. And then when you develop your crest, you want to make sure it represents you as a people. You know, you want it to represent where you come from, who you are, cultural things. Like, for example, on our crest, the Skaferling crest, there are distelfinks, the little birds. Distelfink means like thistlefinch. It's like a goldfinch. But distelfink is the Pennsylvania Dutch like bird. It's like the totem of the Pennsylvania Dutch. So we picked it. And then, there's more it went into it. On the shield, we have like a Pennsylvania Dutch hex sign. And then even our motto is in Pennsylvania Dutch. So we very much invoke that Pennsylvania Dutch heritage into who we are and what we are and all that kind of stuff. Srujan has a question in the chat here. He says, how do you respond to people who call this LARP? I mean,
post-physique. No, I mean, these guys can all attest that half the time when people criticize us, my response is, wow, you look kind of ugly. How can you be right if you're ugly?
Yeah.
But, I mean,
I always have a pretty good argument for this when it comes up, because it's one of my pet peeves when people just say that anything to do with this is LARP. And often the times is they don't even know what the word LARP means. Like, they're just using it because it's a random word they figured out has some sort of meaning behind it.
It's internet slang for, like, you're taking something seriously that I think isn't serious, ergo you're LARPing.
No, I mean, it's internet slang for I don't like this.
Yeah. I don't like this, and you do, you freaking LARPer.
But anyway, I mean, we have to understand that LARPery in its pure and actual form is when you know that you're not really doing something that you believe in. It's imaginary, you know it. It's like dressing up to go to a comic convention as the Flash. You know that you're not actually the Flash, right? It's just a game. But people who actually live and believe strongly in this lifestyle, even if it's very very divergent from what they grew up with or with what modern society believes, isn't necessarily LARP. No one would say that the Amish are LARPing because they don't use electricity.
If they're LARPing, they're doing a real good job of it, because I'm right, very convinced.
A-plus LARPing.
How are they not winning those Comic-Cons award every year? Like, this is A-plus great stuff.
But, back to the original question of how to name and develop your clan. Just sit down with the forming members and just develop your identity, because you have to remember that, speaking of LARP, this is not LARP. This is an identity that is going to be passed down to your children, your children's children. We are just rebuilding something that was taken from us. We aren't creating something new. We are just reinstating something that was lost. So it's something that's very important. It's very spiritual. And when you do when you develop your name, you should do a ritual and do a bloat and consecrate the name. And this is something, an identity that's going to stand forever and ever until like the world blows up and people are gone. So remember that this is something that is immortal. This is eternal.
Oaths are binding, and if you're making an oath with your kindred to the gods, especially gods like Tyr, Odin, Freyr, and whatnot, you better hold it.
You better hold it. That's why in our community,
oath breaking is an act of belief, formally in a religious sense.
That's why oath breaking in our communities is so egregious. It's an oath breaker. There's a guy that was, kind of close to my kindred. He got declared an oath breaker, and we don't even say his name. If he showed up at one of my events, we'd probably beat him up or something.
Damnatio memoriae, eh?
What's that?
Damnatio memoriae. It's an ancient practice where when someone would be declared a traitor, they would strip all mention of them in the historical record, chisel off all the paintings with their face on it. Never speak of them again.
Oh yeah, that's I wasn't aware of that, but that's pretty much what we did, and that's
I was gonna say it's like one of the most brutal historical punishments in a sense, because it's not just like you're killing someone, you're like deleting their very existence as far as society's concerned.
It's kind of like the Chinese practice of killing everybody 10 generations back. That was a thing.
How can you kill someone 10 generations back? They'd already be dead.
Well, anyone connected to them 10 generations back.
Gotcha. Okay. Yeah, that's pretty brutal, too.
So
yeah.
Basically, anybody who's born might end up getting killed for something your great-great-grandfather.
So, your fourth cousin that you've never even heard of just gets his head lopped off because you shared a grandparent at some point?
Yeah, and you're next. Either way, as a follow-up question, I guess, a little bit quickly, is... you mentioned specifically that your kindred takes inspiration from names and language of the Pennsylvanian Dutch. And I guess, and I see that a lot as well, that a lot of people feel like they might be a bit pressured into taking something very Norse or Anglo-Saxon inspired. Would you say that the local identity is almost as important as the wider identity of the Germanic ancient tribes of, say, Europe, if you're in the New World?
Well, your identity should be part of your current identity. You know what I mean? I'm a Pennsylvanian. I can't, why would I not incorporate that? You know what I mean? If you're from, I don't know, if you're from, California, why wouldn't your crest have a bear on it or whatever? If you are born and raised in California and you go back California so many generations, or maybe your family were settlers from the Virginia colony and your crest has muskets on it or something like that. There's absolutely nothing wrong, and in fact, I highly, highly suggest people incorporate their current identity into their crest and their clan identity, because it's real. It's who you are.
And you can't abandon it either. I don't want to go into it because we're still in the formation stages, but me and Tristan have put a lot of thought into, what symbology and nomenclature reflects, for both of us, but also for where we live and the kind of people that live here. And something that a lot of people, whether they're heathen or not, whether they're, political or not, it doesn't really matter. People oftentimes make the mistake of getting their sense of identity lost in preferences and historical fixations. So for example, someone like me that has legitimate academic backing in studying the Franks and whose ancestry is largely Frankish, in a poetic sense, yeah, I guess you could say that people like me are Frankish. But in a realistic sense, it's just not true, because there's centuries between us and then, and I'm not dismissing, historical connections or anything like that, but new identities are forged. The tribes as we know them from, Caesar's account or from the sagas, those are not the tribes that were 1,000 years before that. These things are always in motion and always moving. So if your kindred is from Pennsylvania, I would say you're almost necessitated to include Pennsylvania stuff, because it's reflective of who you are and your learned experience. So for someone like me, who's from the desert and, the southern coast and whatnot, where it's sunny and agriculture and stuff, me taking up a bunch of stuff that reflected like cold and bleak, like Scandinavia, like Andre's neck of the woods, it would be totally alien. And that would be kind of a LARP because it's something that I have no experience with, that I have no appeal to in my own life. And it's more or less just inserted for what is more than likely aesthetic value. So it's understandable when people, they don't feel like they feel that social alienation or atomization because they don't identify with, you know, urban or suburban, you know, modern culture or the particular regional culture wherever they live. I understand those kinds of frustrations and whatnot. That's kind of why I moved to where I did now. But at the end of the day, you can't really shake who you are and your own experience. Like me, like I don't like necessarily being a desert rat, so to speak, but it's what I know and it's what I've experienced in. And to try to shake that is kind of both dishonest and in my case, because I have, you know, pioneering ancestors and whatnot, it's kind of, you know, flipping the bird to them because they put up a lot of sacrifice personally, monetarily, etc., to enable the circumstances that resulted in my birth where I am now. And so in a fatalistic, you know, word kind of way, it's like you can't turn your back on the circumstances that led to where you are because that's as important as where you're going. The past is as important as the future, and you have to pay respects to both, past, present, and future, just like Norwina's model, really.
Yeah, no, I agree with all of that. And Devin in the chat here actually raises an excellent point. He says, it feels like a LARP because our family doesn't have a sense of identity out of 20th century Americanization. That is a fantastic topic to talk about because, yes, it may feel like a LARP to you because capitalism and Americanization has robbed you of a true identity. However, that is why it is important to build and create and forge a new one. Why can't you make a new one? And remember this, it may be LARP right now until you teach it to your kids, and then it's tradition.
Yeah, that was exactly the point I was getting at talking about the Amish. It's only LARP if you don't believe it and you don't pass it down. Once your kids are raised in that sort of tradition, it really stops even being able to be talked about as LARP. It's just what you are.
If someone mistakes a religious zealot or a genuine practitioner believer for a LARPer, it's either indicative of their own stupidity and ignorance or the lack of sincerity of the person they're observing. If it's their own stupidity and ignorance, then just don't worry about it. Like, there's no reason to waste any of your a moment out of your day to think about people that think what you're doing is silly. Because frankly, when those same people that say, oh, you're LARPing, I think that streaming Netflix for 6 hours a day is silly. I think that's dumb. I think living through your television is way more stupid than dressing up in, I don't know, a 9th century tunic. But, you know, that's me.
Yeah, and it's only LARP if you feel inauthentic. If this is meaningful to you and those around you, and you guys put your energy and your belief into it, well, guess what? It's now authentic. So do not let that stop you. It is up to you to put your faith and your love and your energy into making something new. Because if you are somebody, and there's a lot of people, especially here in the United States, man, there's a lot of people. They have no idea where their ancestors came from. They don't know. Their last name is pretty much meaningless to them. Like, they're completely, completely rootless. They're like, oh, well, my grandfather moved from Michigan, and I live in Ohio, and my brother lives in Colorado, and my sister moved to Maine, and I see the kids, her kids, you know, once every 4 years at Christmas when they fly in. And if you are somebody that is like that, You have more reason than anybody else to forge an authentic identity. So get that LARP stuff out of here. Get that out of here.
I've always held the belief that true faith and true belief will convince pretty much anybody. But it has to be true.
Yeah.
Well, I mean, at some point, if it's true and authentic enough, then it doesn't matter what other people believe.
No, exactly.
Yeah.
And that will end up convincing people.
So, what do we got? What do we got up next?
Right. So, for the next question, are there any common pitfalls or noob traps that people should know about when they're organizing?
Vetting. Vetting is the number one thing that you got to have in order. When you first form, you're going to be so excited. You're going to be so like into it. There's going to be a lot of momentum and stuff like that. It's like when you start a new job and you really got a lot of energy for it and you're working real hard and real fast. And then you're at the job for 5, 6, 7, 8, 9, 10 years. And then you don't move quite as fast, but you're in the groove. You know exactly what's going on. You know everything that happens. You don't make as many mistakes. It's something like that. So one of the noob traps that people fall into is not having thorough vetting. Thorough vetting is very, very important. For example, this is going to sound, some people have told me that this is too much, but this is because you got to keep in mind when you're forming a kindred, it's not a bro club. It's not a gun club. It's not a kickball league. This is family. When these people swear to you and you guys are blood sworn to each other, you guys are married. Not in like a man and a woman getting married, but you guys are now family. You guys are now family. So you have to remember that these people that you are bringing in to swear to your kindred are going to become your family. Do you really want people that are kind of goofy or kind of crazy or untrustworthy becoming part of your family? I mean, you already probably have, you're like me and you're like most people that I know, you probably already have family members that are goofy and crazy and untrustworthy, and you know they probably aren't allowed to come for Christmas dinner. So why do you want more? You don't. So you want to have these vetting systems. So people have said that this is a little too much, but I disagree. And for this reason, my clan grows much slower than other groups. I actually just had a conversation with a guy in a chat pretty recently, today or yesterday or something like that, and he said that he's from like low church Protestant America in the Midwest, and people form congregations that hang out in living rooms and bookstores, and then they eventually grow and they get enough people that they build a church and blah 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 blah. And he's like, why don't you guys follow that model and grow like that? You know, it seems like you guys are growing very slowly. Well, here's the difference: in 50 years, that church is going to go up for sale, and those people aren't going to know each other anymore. And the Skaferlings, my clan, is going to be known in 1,000 years. So,
and there's also the literal binding aspect of these, you know, oaths and brotherhood and whatnot. We have examples in the lore of, you know, people swearing to be blood brothers being a very powerful thing, because with that relationship comes a lot of responsibility. Like, you have to avenge your brother if they're wronged. You have to seek restitution for their wrongness. You have to seek out the payment of Wehrgeld and all that sort of thing. So when you think about this, like Dave was saying, do you really want someone in your kindred that you're unsure of? You want it to be entirely people that you would trust with your life and that would trust, you know, their lives with you. Because that's the only real way to build something that will last 1,000 years, like Dave said. And it's really important because, and I think your friend or whoever it was might have had a good point in that we should be aiming at, you know, get-togethers that turn into mustering the resources to build our own temples and whatnot. But that's kind of a far-off thing. I don't think most people right now should be worried about building temples, unless you're Andre. But anyway, so it's really important to have that bond of brotherhood. Like, and I think there's good ways that you can encourage that sort of relationship within your kindred. So, for example, let's say someone in your kindred was a master smith. They were really good at making swords. Let's say that through dedication, service to the kindred, through just being an overall swell dude, that one day, you know, this master smith would present you with your own like sword, custom made just for you, like made to appeal to your personality, that one day you will hand off to your eldest son and that he'll hand off to his eldest son and so on and so forth. That kind of thing, like I mentioned earlier, carrot on a stick, it's not like a bribe or an incentive like that. It's really something that cements your oath in the material, like how our ancestors used to swear their oaths on swords and on rings and stuff that their lords would give them in exchange for service. That's the kind of thing we're talking about.
Yeah. And it's just important. Vetting. In my clan, in order for you to even show up, we have open doors to people, that we have open events that people can come to. I'm actually going to have one next weekend. But we have open events people can come to. But in order to join, to be considered for joining, we have, first of all, you have to be of Pennsylvania stock. You have to be of Pennsylvania Dutch stock. You have to be broadly European, visibly broadly European, or you have to be married to some broadly European and married to somebody of Pennsylvania stock, just to be considered. And if you get considered, then you have to come hang out for a while. We have to get to know you and meet you and stuff like that. And then after a while, if we really like you at Yule and you show some sort of, you know, energy about it, you may enter what we call the novitiate period, which is like a probationary period. And during this time, you have required reading. You have you have to show up to every event. You have to be around. We have to get to know you. We're gonna get to know your family. We are going to pry into you. We're gonna look into you. We're gonna ask you, you know, if you're divorced, we're gonna go check out and see what your ex-wife looks like. We're gonna see everything about you. I want to know everything about you. And it might seem invasive, but it's kind of like a rapid way of us getting to know you. You know what I mean? We want to see what the skeletons are in your closet, if there are any, because we don't want to be blindsided that you are a murderer or a bank robber or a rapist or something like that. Because con men are out there. There are people that are con men. And there are people that can put on a mask for a very long time, and then sometimes for years, and then take it off, and then that's it. So we really look into you, and I think everybody else should too. When you go into this novitiate period, we tell you straight to your face, we're going to look into you. We're going to know everything about you. And then on top of that, you have reading criteria. You have to pass some tests. There's some other stuff you got to do. You have to attend all events. And on top of everything, we have to like you. You know, and that's the kind of what the beginning is. We have to like you. You have to mesh with us. You have to be able to get along with everybody. And then after your year of novitiate period, from Yule to the next Yule, if you may be inducted, or we may extend your novitiate period another year, or we may say we might say no. You must go and hang out in the Freundschaft, which Freundschaft is just like the auxiliary, where people that may live far away or something like that, we're cool with them. We hang out with them. They're our friends. They come to open events. We invite them sometimes to regular events, but to our most intimate events, they don't come. And if you go ahead.
I was going to say something very important to add. I feel, given experience and just given gender and social dynamics, something me and Tristan worked out that I think would be good advice for a lot of people is not to have, and I mean no disrespect to the ladies out there, but unmarried adult women who have no long-term romantic involvement with a member or something are usually bad news, not necessarily through any fault of their own, but because, you know, where there are single men and single women, they will compete and, you know, drama will happen and stuff will fall apart.
Yes.
So it's really important to keep it family oriented. You want to focus on people that are either married with kids or married and looking to have kids, you know, kind of in the family preparation stage, or just, you know, people who are about that. And I know it's easy in this day and age. You know, a lot of girls like to get attention by saying, oh, I want to be a stay at home woman with 12 kids. And guys do the same thing with, oh, I'm going to, you know, work 70 hour weeks and, you know, build a barn with my hands. And a lot of this stuff is, you know, it's good intentions, but it doesn't really, you know, follow through. So I would just caution people to be aware of how social and gender dynamics work when you think about adding people and whatnot. And there's also stuff you can do. So, like, I'm not saying you have to exclude women or anything like that, but maybe make a separate lodge, so to speak, for them, where there's like a matriarchal type figure. Like, for example, Dave's wife, who sounds like, you know, quite the leader herself, and, you know, would be able to advise and monitor and, you know, lead younger women who want to become wives and mothers and, you know, do the whole clan thing. That sort of thing is very much acceptable, I think. But I also would just reiterate, it's important not to cross streams, because I've seen it happen time and time again where, you know, one guy is obsessed with a lady, or, you know, some dude leaves his wife for another one, or just stuff like that. And it's neither stuff. It's bad. It's dishonorable. Like, just don't touch it with a 9-foot pole. It's best to just avoid it to begin with.
when you start playing love dodecahedron with the kindred, it everything will fall apart. You can't do that.
We do have a single lady in our kindred. I would highly advise people not to do that. Not because necessarily that they're trouble, but it will end up being trouble. And I'm not gonna mention any names or lay out my kindred business too much, but the young lady in my kindred started dating one of our kinsmen, and they eventually broke up, as most young relationships do, right? So now there's that dynamic of them being broken up people, and when they, you know, bring new people, when they have new boyfriends or girlfriends, and they bring them, they have to know that they are attached to this person's ex. You know what I mean? It's a dynamic, and it's not. Yeah. And here's another thing that you're going to deal with, even with long term. You say, okay, guy, with your long term girlfriend that's now your fiance, you guys are in our kindred now. As I said before, most relationships break up. They break up. You can't just kick her out. You know what I mean? She's in now. But these two are broken up. So now you have this dynamic. So it's a lot of it. Sometimes it's unavoidable.
Yeah, but, I mean,
there is at some point just a concession to modernity that a lot of people today don't get married, even if they're in long-term relationships where a long time ago they would have been married many years ago.
Yeah. Well, like common law marriage is still a thing in some states, but yeah, by and large, there are concessions to modernity. I would, however, add, and I understand that we do live in modernity, so it can't be helped, but marriage typically is an oath, and breaking an oath is bad. So if people are getting divorced willy-nilly, and I'm not trying to, you know, throw shade at nobody or nothing, but I would be kind of hesitant or wary of divorcees, barring, you know, extraneous circumstances, because me personally, I've always kind of viewed it as like a very much an oath, like that you're taking to another person. And if you break that kind of oath, I'm really not going to trust you probably at the end of the day.
Right. I mean, people who are breaking up their families really raises questions of whether you're going to gel with our values and ethics.
Exactly. Like, I feel like if you were a loyal kinsman to our kindred and you really embraced the Tsetian way of life and, you know, Asatru and following the gods and stuff, you would work on your marriage rather than split it apart, even if only for the sake of your children, because at the end of the day, raising healthy children and healthy families who go on to start other healthy families and have more healthy children is the name of the game.
Yeah, it's a hard thing to deal with, but you gotta, it's just, this is why I was saying earlier that you have to be dynamic as a social leader, because you are going to get curveballs. You know, there's going to be people in your kindred that have problems. Yeah. There's going to be people in your kindred that develop problems. There's going to be people in your kindred that fall in hard times. There's going to be things that you don't expect. You know, a guy and a girl that have been together for a long time, they just like start to hate each other. Say like nobody's like cheating or anything like that. They just start fighting or hating each other. Maybe the guy has a toxic relationship with his mother and it ruins the relationship. Or maybe the girl is like, I don't know. Maybe who knows? But they break up for whatever reason. These people are both still your family. You know what I mean, you can't kick either of them out because of that. But now, as a social leader, you have to figure out how to roll with the punches and keep cohesion. Maybe say during like a camping event, you guys got to stay apart. No drinking when you guys are both together. Make sure that when they bring their new boyfriends or girlfriends or fiancés or whatever, that those people are informed of the thing. And that's going to be another topic that we're going to bring up here, is that you know, how to do that. I forget what I was talking about. What do we got on we've been doing this for a while. What's on next on the list there?
So how often should events and community outreach programs occur?
For my kindred, we do, we have like a weekly thing where people can just come over to my house and we just hang out, or we'll play games, or we'll fire up the grill, or just, yeah, you know, I mean, we just have like a constant flow of Saturdays or Sundays or whatever. That day is always open. That is like the family dinner. That's the Sunday dinner. Come on over. And people come over, and that's really cool. And like the inner core, the people that are really close and live really close, get together a lot. And then those that live a little bit further out, they come once in a while. So that is a very important thing, is having your weekly get together if you can swing it. Nextly, you should try to have something at least once a month. At least once a month. I am very blessed that my kindred, like there's nobody in my kindred that's more than an hour away. So people just like some of my kinsmen are like, you know, 15 minutes, 10 minutes. So they just pop over. You know? So that I have that luxury. But for those of you that maybe don't have that luxury, you're a little bit further apart, try for once a month and have like your open, like instead of having Sunday dinner, have your monthly dinner, or monthly barbecue or monthly game or monthly whatever you're doing. And just try to keep frequent contact as much as possible. You know, you don't want people drifting away. And then also you want to have your big bloats. You know what I mean? You have your three or your four bloats, depending on what calendar you use. And those are mandatory. Those are mandatory.
Right, so I'll go with the next question here. How do you avoid being labeled as some weird fringe cult?
This is actually a really good question. I saw this one. So this is something that you're going to deal with. People do not understand folk religion. They're not going to understand that you are not like Christianity, that you are not just going to a church, that you are forming a family. You're going to get the question of, is this a cult or something like that? You know, I mean, I just laugh at it, obviously, and I explain to them what cult means in the modern sense, and it's obviously not true. And then I bring up, a lot of times, especially if they're Christian, that's a thing that skeptical Christians will say, so you're forming a cult. I'm like, well, I mean, if I'm forming a cult, then the early teachers of Christianity that were, you know, preaching in caves, they were cults too. Then Christianity is just a big Jesus cult. Like, what is the difference? And that usually disarms them. But a lot of times people will find anything that is not universal, because modern people like to assume that all institutions are come and go as you please. There's no real conviction or loyalty to anything. So you can just come and go as you please. It's all disposable, throwaway culture, which is now goes to their families as well and their marriages. They just throw their marriages away. But
yeah, you don't like your spouse, get a new one. Don't like your kids, like have more, get new ones. Like it's just everything is treated like a material object, and it's kind of gross.
It's real gross. But the biggest defense against all misunderstandings is being a likable, normal person. Being a likable, normal person. I disarm everybody because I got jokes and I'm fun to be around and I'm a good cook and just the basic things that are good for social interaction will disarm people. Here's something that people need to realize. You can be, believe, and say just about whatever you want. If you are likable, if people like you, you can get away with most anything. You know, I get up in front of people and I say the most like insane dark humor, like just pops out of my mouth because I have no filter. And people are like, oh, no. Blah, blah, blah. But if I was in a room full of strangers, they would be like, oh, my God. You know what I mean? You could get away with so much. So it's very important. This is another thing about being a social leader. You are going to meet the families of your kinsmen. Maybe like their mom or their grandparents, or you're going to run into them. They have to like you. So just be normal. Just be normal. Be normal. Be friendly. Invite them over to things. That is the best defense against everything. You know, be a good cook. Be a good host. Be funny. Be likable. Put on a nice shirt. Take a shower, look good, be handsome, be a likable, cool person.
Yeah. Oh, and you know, on that same note, you know, being respectful and being polite will take you places that you wouldn't expect. Like, if you, especially, I know people have their personal issues with different groups of people, or like based on religion or whatever. Like, I know a lot of people in our community have a bone to pick with Christianity, and at the end of the day, you know, I kind of do too. But whenever I go about my day-to-day life, I always try to treat everyone I encounter, unless, of course, they're aggressive or disrespectful towards me, then, you know, all bets are off. But other than that, I try to be respectful, helpful, courteous to everyone I know, everyone I see, because I think it's important for a social leader to have, you know, ultimately strength and wisdom. And I don't just mean, you know, physical strength and wisdom in the sense that you're a human encyclopedia, but can you relate to people and advise them in ways that are realistic and, you know, palpable? Can they lean on you if they need your help and your support? Are you more or less, are you a champion to the people who would look up to you, who would ask for your help, who would ask for your guidance? If the answer is no, then you need to improve yourself. Like, so when I think about, if I were to have to lead people, there's a lot of work I need to do on myself so that I can provide them the strength and wisdom and leadership that they would expect and that they would need. And so when you treat people in your day-to-day life with courtesy, with politeness, with respect, and, you know, if they know who you are, if they know what you are, they start to, you know, even subconsciously make that connection. Like, oh, you know, these, like, if you got a bunch of guys, like I was talking earlier about doing maybe even like charity stuff. So if you have, you know, guys in our spheres, they have a certain aesthetic, like we talked about. A lot of them typically like the metal kind of look. They like the runic tattoos and the big beards and all that. If you got a bunch of Viking looking dudes that are all kind of intimidating, all, you know, doing some kind of charity work for kids with cancer or cleaning up a park or something like that, people are going to really start to think like, wow, those Sathian guys, they're pretty cool. Like, they're a bunch of big, scary biker looking dudes, but they're always doing nice stuff for people. And over time, that's how you win acceptance in a community. If you're always looking like some fringe, like Wolves of Vinland people that want to go run around in the woods and be weird, then yeah, people are going to think that you're weird. But like Dave was saying, if you look nice, if you're clean, like if you're relatively clean cut, I'm not saying, you know, shave your hair and, you know, wear a suit, but, you know, whatever works for your look, your style. If you're polite, if you're well-mannered, if people like you, it will take you far, far, like, you know, to a different place entirely than if you just knew everything there is to know about the lore or everything there is to know about 8th century Viking combat tactics. Like, these are all things that are good to know and that are fun to know. But at the end of the day, are you as a person palatable? If you're not, then you need to get to a place where you are, because that's how you grow and that's how you convince people that what you're about is virtuous and strong and wise.
And strength is, here's another thing, besides being likable, is speaking about your faith and confidence, because you are going to, or with confidence, I should say, because you are going to get questions about it from people that don't know it and don't understand. You, instead of saying, well, because we are very, so we, like, we have this, you know, in heathens have this like innate trying not to be Christian thing, and it boils into this wishy-washy uncertainty kind of sound when we talk. Well, I believe this, and some people think this, and some people blah blah blah. When you know in your heart of hearts what you believe and what you think, and it's backed up by your sources, and it's backed up by the myths, and it's backed up by your folk. You know what I mean? You need to be able to say, I am this. This is this. You know what I mean? Not, I think that, no, this is what it is. This is what, you know, this is what I am. This is what we are. This is what it is. Instead of this wishy-washiness. Nobody respects wishy-washiness. When they hear wishy-washiness, they're going to think you're insincere. They're going to think you're inauthentic. They're going to think that you're LARPing.
Well, it's true. I mean, I'm not trying to throw stones or nothing, but if you are wishy-washy, it indicates a lack of judgment on your part to, like, arrive at a conclusion that you support, or it indicates that you don't really have courage. Like, you're kind of spineless. You just go whichever way the current's pushing you. And that's not a good indication of quality in a person.
People don't respect that. People don't respect people that aren't authentic. People don't respect people that are insincere. So don't be like going and be like this hardcore zealot and like be mean to them or anything like that.
Yeah. Well, be a confident zealot. Don't be a mean zealot. And I, this is going to sound kind of dramatic.
Just call me out like that, Dave.
Yeah. Right. Well, see, that's why we work well together. I'm nice and you're mean. But no, the thing is, Tristan's actually very nice. I'm kidding. But you want to be strong in a lot of ways, and this might sound a little dramatic, but if you're thinking about, you know, if people are asking you questions or they're talking to you about, you know, this kind of stuff, you know, your religion and views in general, you know, Odin is represented by what? The storm wind. Let it be your voice, as corny as that might sound. Let that energy, that spirit, let it literally speak for itself. why you believe what you do, why you feel the way what you do. Don't try to articulate an argument, not like in a scholarly sense. Just let it flow out of you, because people will respect that and they'll hear it. Like when I was at work, you know, for a long time, all my coworkers had no experience with any of that kind of stuff. They had no idea what it was, no idea what I was talking about 95% of the time. I mean, one day one of the waitresses, you know, saw my Mjolnir necklace and was like, "What is that? Are you some kind of cultist?" And I just kind of smiled and was like, "Eh, in a manner of speaking." But I was always very kind of blunt and forthright with stuff. Like, so I would ask the busboy, you know, I'd be like, "What have you conquered today? Like, what advances have you made?" And he'd just be like, "Oh, I don't know." And I'd say, "Come on, man. Odin's not impressed by that." And he's just like, "Well, I don't believe that." I'm like, "Well, you should, because he's looking at you and he's not impressed. You just got to be resolute. Don't be a zealot. Don't be like, oh, you're an idiot because you don't believe what I believe. Don't be that guy. No one likes that guy."
Oh, yeah.
But be firm.
That's another thing. Don't make people feel stupid, especially like working class people. And we are a working class faith. And many of the people that we associate with are going to be working class people. They don't like being talked down to. You know what I mean?
Right.
A guy that works his balls off all day isn't going to be cool with some guy talking down to him. Yeah. You know what I mean? He gets talked down to enough.
The tough guy stuff, too. It's the same brood of thing. Like, you like being condescending and making people feel dumb. You like being, you know, aggressive and making people feel weak or small because you like to be aggressive. I can always guarantee you there's someone smarter than you and there's someone bigger and badder than you. It would behoove you to act within your station and not be wantonly cruel or arrogant, because at the end of the day, that's just kind of a nasty character trait.
Yeah.
If it's like, oh, sorry, go ahead.
Oh, I was just going to say, our boy Light of Decay has a really good saying. He says, smart people say smart things in smart ways. Really smart people say smart things in understandable ways. And that is I think that goes for people that are strong too. If you're a strong personality, you don't gotta flex it all the time. You don't need to project it on people. You just, you know what I mean, you just know what you can do. You know what you know, and you're good at conveying that in both of those things in palatable ways. And it's just pretty much what I when you want to disarm normal people that are coming into maybe interacting with you, just be likable. And just be normal and just be yourself and be funny and treat them like people and don't be a weirdo and don't look like a weirdo. Just don't be a weirdo. You know, that's all that it is. And be a good host. What is like the thing that Odin teaches us in Havamal? Be a good host. And most of all, here's one of the best tools that I have seen for event throwing and interacting with people and running things. Be a good cook, man. Let me tell you, people will show up. People will show up just to eat your food. I'm telling you, it goes a long way.
True.
It goes a long way.
It really does. I wanted to address one of the comments here, though, from GeoGeo, talking about politeness. You don't be polite to someone because you want them to like you. You just be polite because it's a proper thing to do. Like, there's no reason to just wantonly be a dick to people or to be discourteous. And besides, it reflects better on you and fellows like you if you're known for having virtue. It's not about being liked. It's about just being virtuous as a person.
All right. We're like running over. There's still a lot of meat on the bones here. Maybe we could do a part two.
Yeah.
Let's do one more. Let's do one more and we'll shut it down.
All right. For one more, how often should you hang out informally with people in your kindred? Is it even needed to be friends with the people who are in your kindred?
Oh yeah, that's as much as you can. That's like the number one. It should not. You should have a real informal, like friendly relationship with everybody, right? And once your kindred gets a little bit bigger, people are gonna go off into cliques. It's just how that it is. It's just how people are. Once your kindred reaches about 10, 12, or 7, 8, or I don't know, whatever number, you're going to have these two guys that are hiking buddies. You're going to have these two girls that like to, whatever together. You got these guys over here that are gamers and they like to game together. And people are going to break off into cliques. But informal friendship, laughing together, singing together, playing music together, cooking together. Like these are the building blocks of the kindred. you know, having like if anybody comes and hangs out with my kindred, you're gonna see a bunch of people that are just best friends. That's like the core of it, and that is what's gonna keep you together the longest. That is what's most important.
The archetypical like feasting behavior binds people together like you wouldn't believe. I mean, anyone that's been to summer camp or in Boy Scouts knows if you all cook together, if you all sing campfire songs or whatever together, that just binds people. It really does.
Yeah. Family that prays together stays together. That is exactly. so true.
That goes back to like a primal human nature of how do you form a tribe out in the wild. It's the people you eat with and socialize with.
Yup. That's it. There's like, I'll tell you, I have friends that come, they're not heathens, but they're just like my old time buddies, and they like to just come and hang out because they're like, they love the food that we make. They love the times that we have. They love to laugh with us because we're some of the funniest, goofiest people that you'll meet. Man, you come hang out with the Skaverlings, you're going to laugh so hard your face hurts because we are so nuts. We are the jokiest, funniest people, and we have such a good time together, and it's like sometimes it's just us sitting around. We'll make a big delicious dinner and we sit around, and let me tell you, I go crazy when it comes to if you see some of the spreads that I make for these events, it'll blow your mind. I go crazy for this stuff, and because I want this experience to be the best, because hanging around, breaking bread together, there is nothing that beats it. And whether you're making a delicious soup, or you're having some pasta, or you're having a turkey, or chili, it doesn't matter. Whatever you're making, a baked ziti, you guys sit around, and as you're eating, if that food is delicious, that's step one to bonding. You're going to remember that delicious food, and you're going to remember that experience that is now downloaded into your memory banks, that food was good, and then two, the laughter, three, the fun. That is what people are going to remember. So my friends that are not necessarily heathens, they always say, man, I just love coming and hanging out. I just like you guys, man. I just love coming. Man, I remember when you guys remember when you made that? Can you make that again? Or like, that's the building blocks. It's so much fun. And plus the music. If you have songs that everybody sings together, maybe a few guys play guitar, a few guys play harp, a few guys play this or play that, and we get together. People love singing. People love music. People love wine. People love mead. People love good food. People love a good time. And if you give them a good time, they will cherish it. And that is just the building blocks of a family and of a kindred.
Yeah, absolutely.
So maybe that's not the this like crazy esoteric formal kind of answer, but from my experience, from somebody, and I'm so proud of that. This is one of my, besides being a father, and after being a father and a husband, my next favorite accomplishment is being a successful alderman. We're coming up on a decade being together. That is like, I'm so proud of that. If that could be made into a trophy, I would hang it above my bed. And the way that I've done it is just good food, real religious experience, true friendship, and fun, and jokes, and laughter, and trips to Knoebels. People are probably aren't familiar, but Knoebels is like this like old timey amusement park that is free to get into. Trips to Knoebels, camping trips, times together when. You know, funny story, during my second kid's naming ceremony, I said his name wrong, and everybody else said it right, and the whole room erupted into laughter. We remember that. I'll never hear the end of it. I'll probably hear about this when we're, 50, 60 years old. My kinsman Seth, when he got inducted, he took a drink from the horn, and it went down too fast, and he spit it all over my newborn baby. So there's just these like crazy.
Well, that's one way to sprinkle the alcohol.
Yeah. He was so embarrassed.
Baby's probably grumbling like, what?
It went down, and spit it, and it just hit my baby. Completely hit my baby, and he's like, oh my god, I'm so sorry. He was so embarrassed, And everybody just exploded into laughter. It was hilarious. And just these kinds of memories are what we always look back to, and we bust each other's tops about it. And it's just special. It's special. It's a family experience. So, yeah. Do you guys have anything to say in closing?
Not only that we can probably keep going on about this for several hours.
Oh, of course.
In closing, though. I just hope that people found what we're talking about useful and helpful tonight.
Yeah, that's all the questions I had for tonight, though I'm sure I could, you know, spend 20 minutes coming up with 1,000 more, really.
Mr. Andre, you have anything for us?
Not really. I covered my question, and I think we covered most of it. Like the most basic things, at least.
So, in closing, I will say that, clan building, there's a lot that goes into it. You have to make some sacrifices. You have to make some changes in your life. You have to change how you view things and how you view other people. And, it takes a lot of conviction and dedication. You are obligated to do so. You are obligated both by the gods and by our future. We need to do this in order to reestablish identities and primordial bonds and blood ties and things that last. Things that last. These are the things that last. Our ancestors had a social structure that stood for thousands and thousands of years. Remember that. Building these identities and these clans are setting into motion something that is going to outlive us times 1,000. So remember that although it might take a lot of work and take a lot of sacrifice and a lot of dedication, it is worth it because this is what is going to help our people reach glory and victory in the future. And that's no lie. That's no lie. And the reason that we know it is because we could just look right into the past and see how virile and how fertile and how successful and our ancestors conquered the world, dude. They conquered the world with this format. So this is the ultimate rejection of liberalism and modernity, is to form these clans and to develop these relationships with these people as well as with the gods as well. So I pray that our examples were and our talk tonight was helpful and useful for people in a pragmatic way. And I love talking about this kind of stuff, stepping away from the books, stepping away from the studies, and stepping away from the theology and the philosophy and the archaeology and the history. And, you know, I love all those things. But what I love most of all are my family in faith, my children, my wife, living and experiencing the heathen lifestyle and being a heathen above all else. And I know that when you guys that have not stepped into this lifestyle yet, really get into the ancestral mode and you kind of get rid of the hang-ups and you kind of work your way around the obstacles, you're going to know that this just fits like a glove. It just fits like a glove. You're like, I should have been here the whole time. And it's such a wonderful, fulfilling experience that is like nothing else. So I promise you, you're going to love it once. And there are obstacles. There are going to be things that nobody can be able to prepare you for. You just have to experience them and sometimes screw them up. You're going to make some mistakes. But those are important. But once you get into this, time flies. And then 5, 10, 15 years, you're going to turn and look back and say, look how far we've come. And you're going to look at your kinsmen and you're going to see not just people that you formed an organization with, but you're going to see real family that you would fight and die for. And that is something that is special, and that is something that is primordial. And that's all I got for tonight. But many thanks, many blessings, and many hails to each and every single one of you Bog Lords that have tuned in tonight. Make sure to go to facebook.com/IronAgeJodish to check out our boy Neil John, Authentic Vedic Astrology. I'm telling you, it's so cool. So cool. Actually, a guy just messaged me yesterday, and he's like, man, thank you so much for suggesting Neil John, man. He got me into doing these things, and I'm telling you, it's incredible. It's incredible. Facebook.com/
Yeah, I'm looking forward to mine, actually. I've got myself on the list a couple of months back, and because he's rather booked up, and I'm hoping to get my full, absolute full reading of the entire works done.
Yeah, it's incredible. It really is incredible. And not just, let me tell you guys something real quick about Neil John. Not only is the astrology and stuff really cool, Neil John is one of the most gifted, talented counselors I've ever met in my entire life. He told me stuff that I needed to hear. And
he's also a really good friend and just a cool guy.
He's awesome. He's one of a kind, incredible. The guy's a genius. I'll say it right now. So go over to Facebook.com/IronAgeJodish and check out Neil John. And if you decide to get a birth chart and a reading and all that stuff, tell him Big Dave sent you. Let him know that Big Dave sent you. If you want to support the Bog, you want to help us keep the lights on, go over to Patreon.com/TheBog and sign up. We got a tier for everybody, $5 all the way up to $50. We are going to get all the content, all the exclusive stuff, big wave stuff coming your guys' way. So you get RSS feed to every single audio to every single show that we do to listen to in the car, at the gym, on your commutes, or at work. If you want to support the Bog another way, man, summer's coming, guys. Summer's coming. Get you a sleeveless, get a muscle shirt, get a Bog apron, get all kinds of stuff. There's sundresses for the ladies. We even got onesies for the babies, because I know a lot of you guys are dad squad, and a lot of the heathens are very virile folk. So I know you guys got some babies coming, you got some babies out. So dress your baby up in some Bog gear. Have some Bog stuff for the babies. But I don't have my camera on, but I got my horn right here. We're going to raise a horn to our most exalted patrons. And that is going to be House Allen, Corey, and our very own Andre. Many hails to them. And many hails to each and every one of you. Many blessings, and I'll see you guys next time here on the Bog. Hail.